The audio bleed over, I do apologize for. It is a glitch. It wasn't that we were talking over each other. I do apologize. I've heard y'all's complaints. It wasn't me and it wasn't Sandy. When we were recording it, it sounded fine. And when I edited it, it sounded fine. But after publishing, something messed up. I do apologize. Hey folks, before we get into the podcast with Sandy, I'd like to give a shout out to their YouTube channel and the Monroe Associates for letting him come on the show today and scheduling him in. He's a really busy guy, and I thank him for it. But y'all must go check out their YouTube channel, Monroe Live. It's informative, educational, and entertaining. You will get a few laughs, you'll learn a bit about Tesla and other products and projects that they're working on. It's on YouTube at Monroe Live. I highly recommend subscribing. I subscribed. I actually have notifications on. I recommend doing that as well. You'll always learn something each time that you watch their videos. I highly recommend it. Let's get to the podcast. Thank you for listening. Hey, folks, it's Scott from Scott Pittity. This is a podcast with Sandy Monroe from Monroe Live, and I'm very excited to have this conversation. And Sandy, if you have any opening remarks or comments that you would like to say.
Well, actually, I just like to say thanks, Scott, for inviting me on. Hopefully I'll be able to answer any questions that you kind of pop up. Yeah, I'm very happy to be here. So ask away.
And yeah, I've got fielded some questions from Twitter, and I've came up with some questions since that earnings call. And I wanted to tell you about how it's funny how there's always a little bit of disinformation with Tesla. And it's almost like the only company that has the disinformation and disgruntled employees that are magnified by the media. And somebody brought up an article where somebody got a Model Y delivered with a piece of wood strapping down onto the condenser. And the person on Twitter said, since you had your hand on the condenser and you and in your video it shows a zip tie and green tape, and I don't know if the green tape adds any like structural support to the brackets.
No, just
But would you see anything why they would have added that piece of wood? Maybe they cut the zip tie too short, too long, something
well.
like.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. It isn't really a piece of wood. It's actually something I made to look like wood, but it's really kind of a structural foam. And yeah, you can buy it at Home Depot or any of the other hardware stores. But really, what it's there for is to contain vibration. And that wood looking product is exactly the same as the one we took off of our Model 3, or sorry, Model Y, I should say, a while ago. And actually, I got it sitting in front of me because you did give me a heads up on this. So ours is white, and it has only one metal band holding it on, but the latest ones have two metal bands. And that's probably because the condenser is vibrating, just over rocky roads and things like that. And so that's probably one of those running up changes that they've done at Tesla. But ours just had one.
It's just always interesting because you see these things get amplified in the media, and the media mocks them for doing it. And I kind of see some ingenuity on the production line. If you can't produce the material you need to hold it in, go buy it from somewhere and go get it and put it on there and fix it. And I mean, sometimes And they could always go back to the service and fix it and make it look prettier if you really wanted to, but nobody's going to be looking at that condenser. It's not visible from the consumer side. It's when you open the trunk, you have to take off this big giant the frunk plastic bin that they've
Right.
changed. But I do find it funny that they've could you think of any times that Legacy Auto did something like that, this on the fly, that they were like, oh, this is not fitting right, so we need to put this piece of plastic in just to make it fit snug, or anything like that?
Yeah, it happens all the time. I mean, it's not a rare occasion to see something like this. And quite frankly, we have terms that people use, like dashboard and floorboards. They used to be wood, you know that, right? In fact, I had a Morgan Super Sport, and it had basically a C channel. And an ash was bolted, ash wood was bolted to the side, and that's what held the body to the frame. It worked. It works great. There's lots of places where natural product is used, but the thing that we're looking at is not made out of wood. It's made out of a structural stuff that a structural extrusion that in essence helps you absorb some of the vibration, and whether you make it yourself or whether you buy it at the hardware store and cut it up, it's probably going to be about the same price. And they probably get it for a hell of a
All right.
deal. So,
Yeah, they probably walked into wherever they got it from, and then they said, we could make this, but we can buy it right now. And then they went down and saved the costs. Another comment that I recently saw you say, and it kind of got blown up into the media, is that Tesla shouldn't rush on the compact, affordable $25,000 car. And something that gets on my nerves about people calling it certain names or whatever is they call it the Model 2. I have a little bit of potty humor, so I just think poop when somebody says two. And I kind of say not the Model 2, the Model R or Model C. And my thought process behind this, to give a real quick sum up, and then you can probably go from there. My sum up on it is that the Model C and Model R, the Model R is going to be built. There's going to be a built for American market compact, and then there's going to be a worldwide Shanghai Berlin compact eventually. And this Model R might be that, but when you look at the like, I mean, it's just a render of a car with a cloth over it from the battery day presentation. But if you really wanted to look at it, a two-door four-seater robo-taxi with a big
Battery.
boot or battery or and a frunk would be enough for the American market. Yeah, it would be a four-seater and you don't get that many people in it, but we've all seen these autonomous robo taxis where all the passengers are sitting facing towards each other, and it doesn't look like, just give me a robo taxi that looks like a normal car and I'll be fine. If it looks a little bit futuristic, but I could see Tesla seems pretty confident in about 3 years that they could do make the car with the correct profit margins. And I just wanted to see what was your thinking on saying that they shouldn't rush to do it and stuff like that? Because I see this as a major interest. There's major interest in the market, even on Twitter, on Facebook, in real life. There's a major interest in a affordable $20,000 car from Tesla. I just feel like it's going to grab up the market share very, very quickly as soon as it's. Yeah, I mean, as soon as pre-orders are available, we're going to know the data on it. It's going to be, in my mind.
Well, the big thing with any car company or any company, period, is to see what you can do about making money. I mean, people don't do this because they want a science project or they want to be famous for
Correct.
something. You do it because you'd like to have a return on your investment. The reason I said they shouldn't rush to do it is because I don't think they'll have the capacity to, unless they build another factory, which I'm sure they could do, but I don't see how they could have enough capacity to make all the cars that everybody wants right now, which are profitable. Those cars are, they're making a lot of money on their vehicles. I wouldn't do it. I would say that it's coming, which is what Elon did. He said it's coming, but how quickly it comes and how much, how many they're going to crank out, that's yet to be seen. And he said it in a couple of years. Well, he didn't give us an exact time. So, but I think that what the shareholders are going to like to see is that he's got several things going on right now. Shanghai's up and running, Berlin's coming, or Germany's coming. And I think that he should, take some profit, and maybe mm-hmm. think about, like, he's got the Cybertruck in Texas coming up. There's a lot of things happening. Sometimes you can get too much on your mm-hmm. plate, but eventually I believe he'll get in, and he will sell that vehicle. But I don't know where he's going to find the capacity right now.
Yeah, it's just, I just ran across my mind. It's funny because Legacy Auto, GM, Ford, not so much the Asian companies, but they've, or the Germans, they've basically stopped selling sedans in the U.S. Right. market. And I famously said, or infamously said, Tesla didn't look at the market and say, oh, people aren't buying sedans, we're going to stop making the Model S and Model 3. They just improved the Model 3, and they made the Model S more affordable for them to make.
Right.
I used to be kind of rough on the Model X because I used to think that it was very expensive to make. And I kind of joked around on Twitter like, hey, maybe y'all should just redesign it from the ground up to make it more affordable to you all for Tesla to make. But more and more, as I look at the Model X, I feel like it should probably stay as is for as long as it possibly can, so they can get every inch of dime that they can get out of that platform. Mm. And it's one of those things, and this might lead into another question, the Model X, how it's designed, it has the Falcon doors and then it has that cross member that goes between it. I'm surprised third parties haven't bought a Model X and cut off the rear section of the roof, reinforced it to like a RV cab or camper cab. Have you ever looked at a Model X in detail? I don't know if you've ever torn down one, or if you've done an analyst on one or anything like that.
We were actually asked to look at a Model S and a Model X. We have very good customers, and when the customer came along and said, how much money would it cost to take apart an S and everything, we gave them a price. And I mean, it's not cheap to do the type of tear down and assessments that we do, where everything's costed and everything, every material is identified, all the suppliers and everything. it's over $1 million. So when a good customer comes along and says, what do you think? Well, we do. We look at it and we tell them what we think. And for the Model S, I said, don't bother. The original Model S. I said, don't bother. There's nothing here for you. You're not going to find out anything new. And quite frankly, you're going to be throwing a lot of money away. The next time it happened was one of our competitors, actually. they wanted it done. And they didn't have any more room at their facility or something. And I said, well, yeah, we can do it for you. Really and truly, this is going to be a nightmare of a job, and it's going to be expensive, and I don't know what you're going to get out of it. But they wanted to do it anyway, because they basically had taken an X-ray of the car. It's called a CT scan, but they had x-rayed the vehicle and they wanted to get a lot more detail on it, like cost and stuff like that. And then what they did was they asked us to an assessment on what could be improved on with that vehicle. We had 1,000 ideas on how to improve the Model X. And I think what they did was they took it to, they went and made a presentation to Tesla, and I think they got spanked, and that's the last they did of that. So those two, that's my two stories for the X and the S. We didn't really jump into it. And quite frankly, when I got the Model 3, I don't know if you ever heard, but we bought that car for Audi, or actually another consulting company that was working with Audi. And they said, can you get one in a couple of days? And I said, well, let me check. And we talked around with some of the brokers that we know in California, and we got one. And it was like a week late. It showed up a week late. And Audi just said, oh, thanks, we got ours now. It's okay. We'll just, thanks so much. And what they did was they took a car, put it in their own airplane, and flew it to Germany. Okay, well, you can't, a commercial aircraft, no way. They would never do that, never. You can't put lithium-ion batteries that size inside of an airplane. Pressure differentials and stuff. Anyways, so we got it, and it's sitting here, and I'm going, well, now what do? We paid for it, and we're not going to get paid back. So that's when we started tearing it apart, and when I saw the Model 3, I saw the gaps, and I saw so many broken parts and mismatch and whatnot. I'm thinking, good God, I'm going to lose my ass on this deal. And then once we got past the superficial stuff, or what we call dinosaur technologies like stamping and whatnot, and we got into the real technology aspects, then I couldn't say enough good. And with the Model Y that we took apart, they've still got a few issues with build quality and things like that, and I absolutely have done nothing but piss all over their paint jobs. I mean, they really do not. Their paint jobs are terrible, but I think that's because they inherited an old plant.
I want to stop you there on the paint jobs. Have you looked at the new technology at the new company that they're going to be using for their new paint job facility? They have an R&D factory that they're going to be based off of. I can't remember the name, but the new paint facility looks very, very interesting. It looks, because it, like, they dip them into like clear water pools and stuff like that. It's a very different way than what Tesla paints now. And I am, because that's one thing I did want to pick your brain on. Why do you think the paint quality is so poor at Tesla? Like, because it is something that, like, it is something that you see a lot of complaints about from avid fans, that they say, oh, I'm going to go get a paint correction. That's expensive. That's not cheap to do. Like, from around here, I think I saw it ranging, if it was an SUV, like a Model Y, Model X size, it was like $4,000 for a paint correction. And I wouldn't want to pay for that. It's like, and another thing that it's been fixed now, but on the Fastlane Car, their YouTube channel, who has a long-term Model Y, their electronic door opener failed, and they got that fixed. And where their hatch is for on their Model Y, one of the, where the hatch gets close to the roof, it was bulging up. And that's one thing that I don't understand why that's failing so much. Why is that being such an issue? Is when the what's going on there that's making the hatch, when it's closed, sit so unaligned? Is it just not quality control catching it as it's going out of the factory?
It's not so much having quality control catching it. That's not the way you're supposed to do it. First thing, you're supposed to do it, the way you're supposed to do it is you're supposed to design in the quality. So when you get to the CAD stage, computer aided design stage, and the engineers are putting it together, right? those parts, those bits and pieces, when they get into the CAD, will be told. The machine will tell it, okay, I want to have 2.5 millimeter gaps all the way around. So the computer will then check it to make sure that the parts will be made properly, okay, at least from the CAD standpoint, from the design standpoint. And then it'll go through something called FEA, failure modes and effects analysis, and finite element analysis, FEA. Those two things, they tell you what will happen over time, or what will bend, or what will distort over time. And everybody does that, and I'm sure that they do it at Tesla as well. But for some reason or other, things leak through their system, and I am not 100% sure why that is. When it gets to the factory, or let me rephrase that, when the parts get to the factory from the different stamping lines and whatnot, there are gauges that that you take the part and you put it on to make sure that the part was made correctly. And I have my doubts as to whether or not people are doing a good job there, because we found plenty of little situations where this part just can't be made right. There's something missing, weld is missing, or a tab is broken or something like that. Those kinds of things are not supposed to happen. And so you have the first quality check is at the design phase. The second quality check is at the manufacturing of the product design, the product tooling and whatnot. So you have one at the tooling stage. Then you have pre-production parts, and you check them out. You build the car in a pre-production environment to make sure that everything fits correctly and it's easy for the operator to put together. That's a check. Then you go into low volume production, and that's another check. So on and on and on. So by the time it gets to full production run, you pick it up, put it on, and it's done. That's the way it's supposed to go. But sometimes things happen at Tesla, and I do not understand how or why, but we've had some people complaining to us saying, well, this doesn't work, or that doesn't work, or this fell off and that fell. And we said, can you send us the parts? And usually they say no, because they took it back and Tesla keeps the old parts and gives them a new one. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you need to talk those people on coming to you to get it fixed, right, to see what's going on. It's almost like if you almost need to jump in front of Tesla service and say, hey, let me fix that. It's like the story recently. I don't know if it's true or not, so I might edit this out, but there was a video of recently of a Tesla person who bought a Model Y and the glass
okay, so here's what happens. I saw and, that and here's what can happen. So the urethane or butyl or whatever they're using that used to hold that window in, if you go for mm-hmm. lunch and somebody didn't pop a window in place, like a windscreen or something like that, when you get dynamic pressures, it'll blow off. There's no question, because the butyl didn't have time to set properly. You wound up with a skin on it. You're supposed to put it on the window. The window then gets transferred over and drops onto the roof, pushed down, and boom, it's done. You'll never have a problem. But occasionally, a line worker will, hey, the whistle blew and I got to go to lunch or what have you. And they put a skin on there. And believe me, all car companies have had windshields pop out, rear brights, the rear window pop out. I mean, it's not that uncommon. But what really is uncommon is to see one pop off when you happen to be driving it. I've never seen that before.
Driving.
But yeah, there were plenty of problems with the Bronco, the Ford Bronco. They had windshields that were popping out. And that was because of the time differential between when they took the window and put the butyl on and stuck it in place. That time is extremely important. You have to make sure that you do it in a correct sequence.
Yeah, and something also very interesting about Ford. I saw in a rental car on their Ford Focuses, and I'll go in a little bit more detail of the Ford Focus too that I want to pick your brain on. Is on the front windshield in the rental car on the driver's side and passenger side in the far where it connected to the pillars. It started to warp the windshield. It started to warp the view, and I was like, how could any safety person or any person who's letting this roll off the factory floor say, you look out your windshield and it's warped. You like it makes a car look a little bit longer. It distorts the road if you look a little bit off to the left. And it was really, really weird. And it's something that I've realized with the Focuses that when you look at the Kia Forte and the Ford Focus right by side, it is literally just bad rebadged a little bit. And is that just because of supply? They're using the same suppliers, or do you think that they have some kind of agreement? Because it is really funny. When the Ford Focus was in production, Kia had a car that was very, very, very similar to the Ford Focus. And I'm kind of a nerd about cars. Like I can tell what the headlights are behind me at dark. So I know what I'm looking at when something is very similar. It's very interesting to me that when car companies use these part bin, or like Elon says, catalog engineering, stuff start looks the same. It starts to look very, very similar. And if
Well,
you have anything to add
a
to
lot of
that.
times what a lazy design engineer will do is he'll use something called morphing. And so you go in and you scan tons of vehicles, and you're trying to come up with something kind of new, but not really. You want something that's proven. So you'll have a look at headlamps that come from a Cadillac, or and maybe the tail lamps of a Lexus, and on and on. So what'll happen is occasionally one of these design engineers will say, well, I've got to have this small car like a Focus, and I've got to do this and that. And he'll look through his catalog of bits and pieces that that have been proven in the industry already, and they'll take and basically either mimic it or morph it, so bending it slightly to stick it in and saying and call it a day and say, look what a genius I am. That kind of design goes on more than you can believe. I do not know about any kind of an agreement between Hyundai, Kia, and Ford Motor Company, but nothing surprises me anymore. So it may be that may be true. As far as an optical problem, you're not supposed to have optical problems on windshields. That's not a
Yeah, we even reported it to the rental car company because we were like, that's that it was
Right.
really bad. It was to a point where like my dad had vision problems and he was like, I can't drive it. Like, thank God we have
Yeah.
another car that we can access. But it was really bad. It was really bad. Like, it was to a point where it would cause somebody to have motion sickness if they looked at it long enough. But another Twitter question I had from James Tipperson, if you could come up with an estimate on the 460/80 packs for the Cybertruck and Semi. Elon just recently said that the Semi truck takes about 3 or 5 times more than what a normal car does, so they need a lot of batteries to source for the Tesla Semi. And I just wanted to see what kind of rating the battery pack's going to have in the Semi, or and what you
I
think
think
the
that
cost
basic,
might be,
yeah. If you basically take a
either.
look at the Tesla Model 3 or the Tesla Model Y, and you put a zero in the back, so instead of 140 kilowatt hours, you got 1,400 kilowatt hours. That's what you're kind of looking at. You're looking at 10x, not 4 or 5x. It's a big deal. Those trucks. they're going to need a lot of oomph to get them from point A to point B. So I would say you're looking at a big, gigantic change. I think Tesla is doing a marvelous job with cars, and I got my name in for a Cybertruck. But at the end of the day, when you go into semis, there's got to be something better than just 100% batteries. I mean, as soon as I load up that truck with batteries, I've increased my weight, and you're only allowed a certain amount of weight for the different classes of trucks. It's either the government is going to have to change their attitude on what can go on an expressway, or we get like the Europeans have 40-year roads. We have in Michigan, we have 10-year roads, but normally it's about 20-year roads. Somebody's going to have to come along and build a more like a Roman road where you're going down 6 feet and stuff like that. I think that the cyber, semi or whatever it is, I think that would not be one of the things that I'd rather make the small sedan than a semi. I just don't. And by the way, there's the other thing is truck drivers, man, they're going to be looking at where's the money, because these guys all make all their money in that million miles that they're supposed to have or supposed to get out of a truck. A semi has to run a million miles. There may be some maintenance here and there, but those guys want a million miles out of their trucks. And I don't know. I don't know. I think the 4680 battery is like super duper. We're going to try and make one up, a mock-up here at Monroe. It'll just be out of wood and whatnot to figure out, there's a lot of holes. We need to find out exactly how many batteries are going to be inside. I think it's somewhere between maybe 950, 970, something, somewhere around in that neighborhood. And I think that it's going to be like, it'll be a good project for us. And we'll be able to understand what it's going to come out and look like. But when you start looking at the semi, you're looking at thousands of cells that are going to be needed there. And those big rig trucks, they want to keep them running 24 hours a day. In fact, most of the truck companies don't even shut them off. It's like they'll just.
Yeah, they leave them.
They
leave them running all constantly. They don't. It's rare to hear a semi truck off in a parking lot.
And there's the reasons for that are basically generation of electricity for maybe the cargo or whatever, just to keep it warm. But I know that they like to have them. Sometimes they're leaving them just so that one crew gets out and another crew gets in, and away they go again. A truck standing still is not your friend. That's dollars down the drain.
And I hate to bring it up, but battery swapping, would that help the Tesla Semi? If they could it was like, there was a modular pack where they could make sure that they could repurpose the batteries that they're taking out, or would that not really even?
We did a battery swap technique on a little car that we did here, a little electric car a long time ago. It's the Club Car Precedent. And that was with using 12-volt batteries, old-fashioned lead-acid batteries, and that worked fine. But when you start looking at the kind of voltage that you're screwing around with when you're looking at one of these gigantic rigs, and how much, that's kind of dangerous, that stuff. So swapping batteries, I think that even Elon's given up on it, because he said that from now on, they're going to glue them in. And that's the best way. I like that idea. And just live with whatever you can charge. Now, the other thing, too, is People are always looking at how long it takes to get 100% charge. What for? Why? I can get 80% charge in a hurry. Good enough. Yeah. Jump in and away you go. I mean, in the olden days when I was a kid, the farmers never asked for a fill-up ever. You know, they'd say, here, give me $5 or $10 or 20 mm-hmm. or whatever it was, but they never filled it up. We've changed our mentality, and now what we've got to do is go back to that other way of saying 80%, that's good enough for me, and away you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't fill up my car all the way. and I drive a gas car. And even somebody said this about the new batteries. The new batties on the 480, the question was, does Tesla's tabless cell design allow for a significant higher peak charging rates? Does it improve required taper curve? And Drew Baglino, Senior Vice President of Powertrain and Energy Engineering, he said, yes, the fundamental limitation of on a charge rate in a lithium ion batteries is avoiding lithium plating on the anode. And while the tabless architecture helps avoid overheating because it's more power dense architecture at high continuous charge rates, it doesn't change the anode plating story. Electrode design and anode material choice more directly determines the maximum charge rate and how to avoid lithium plating.
That's one of the reasons that cobalt is kind of important. But as you move into more nickel, or if we get really lucky and we figure out how to make graphene at a good price, those are two little tricks that we could use in order to make really fast charging batteries. But for right now, they are what they are. I mean, future science is one thing. Right now is where we're living.
Yeah, Elon was asked about if technology in the earnings call, technology started leaning towards solid state batteries. Would he go that way? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yes, if the technology got there and it was better, and we will constantly improve these these new cells. And if new technology comes out that's better than it, we'll try to come up with it and we'll try to work with it. So that's one thing I do like about Tesla, is that if they're not set in their ways and they're always innovating, even on the production line.
And by the way, as far as solid state batteries are concerned, I now have two people who have shown me in a good way that the technology for solid state is there, a little expensive, but a lot lighter. Okay, and there's two things that you want to have if you're going to try and do an electric vehicle, and you want to be successful, you want to focus on two things. One is weight, and the other one is rolling friction. So friction and weight are the two enemies of batteries and electric motors. So if I can figure out how to make a solid state battery that'll give me the same number of kilowatt hours, and it weighs half as much, that's worth something to me. That's worth paying extra money, because now I can put it in and get double the range, or I could sell the car for less money. Ultimately, that's kind of like, and you make customers happier. Solid state batteries charge very quickly, almost as fast as capacitors. And everybody wanted that too, but that's another thing that it's very difficult to keep safe trying to put lightning inside of a bottle. It's tough.
Mm-hmm. And on a question on the Cybertruck, it's kind of something I've always curious on. Do you think crash testing is going to change with it? Do you think they're going to have to come up with, what do you think is going to happen when they start crash testing this Cybertruck? Is it going to break the equipment that they test it with? Are they going to have to come up with a new way to test it? Because it is an exoskeleton. It's it, It seems like everything besides the door is a single casting. Even Elon Musk recently said it's the issue with pouring that cast
Right.
is it, if it gets too cold too quickly
Right.
or cold, it might start to crack. And I'm not an engineer by any shape or form, but so my little Scott Pitty mind starts going, well, what if you had the, built the room, built the
Yeah.
Cybertruck in a temper controlled room? It's basically a ensealed production line that's climate controlled, and basically there will be limited things that humans could do in that. And I've always wondered with the Cybertruck, do you think it's what do you think it's gonna? Because everybody, when we were before we saw the Cybertruck, everybody had these ideas that the truck bed would be detachable and it would be autonomous and we could come back to it. That didn't come to fruition. It's the single cast, beautiful trapezoid thing that I love. I pre-ordered a Cybertruck. It will be my first Tesla that I get. And I've like. I joke around. If somebody wants to give me a Tesla before I get my Cybertruck, great. But that's the car. That's how I'm going to experience Tesla for the first time is a Cybertruck. I've driven model everything except the Y, and loved everything about it. The Model X surprises me to this day about how it really doesn't feel like a huge SUV. I've driven big SUVs from Land Rovers to Toyota FJs, and they feel like giant land boats. And the Model X feels like a sedan that's a little bit fatter up top. And it the driving dynamics in Tesla cars surprise me daily. And the driving dynamics that Elon's talking about on the Cybertruck blow my mind. It's going to be able to perform like a 911, or he compared it to a 911. I just can't wait till some people get the car to test it outside of Tesla, because it's going to be very interesting to see how regulators like it. And I know the European market's not going to get it, and Elon has hinted that there might be a small Cybertruck coming out that's called the Wolverine, or he could be jokingly said it. And I think they should do it. I think they should come up with a small truck for the worldwide market and do it in the United States, but not rush to do it. But what would you think about how the Cybertruck might get tested when it's released, and that's crashing and crash data, and how
Well,
it's going to
I
affect
can tell
other
you for
vehicles
sure
on the
that,
road?
okay, so let me start earlier on. I've never recommended any electric vehicle until we tore apart the Y. And I said, if you can live with a paint job, this is the one to buy. That's it. And I've looked at everything. So everything from the Porsche to the Jaguar to whatever, and including all of the models that Tesla's got out right now. The only car I've ever recommended and said, this looks like it's worth your money, is the Model Y. But as I mentioned already, I think, as I've mentioned in the past many times, I have five Cybertrucks on order. And they went, we ordered them in the first 10 or 15 minutes of, in the first 10 or 15 minutes when they went on sale. So I'm going to be getting an early one. One will tear apart, one I'm going to keep, and there's three other guys here that want the other ones. And I don't know if I mentioned it, but I am kind of one of those guys that like to I haven't I have a Rubicon right now with winches and push bars and all kinds of stuff to make sure that if I get into trouble, I'll get out. The Cybertruck for me is the perfect it's the perfect choice. And with the Hummer now and the Rivian out there, you're looking at, like, the Rivian is a true pickup truck. That's definitely it's going to nail that market. And you've got the Hummer, which is kind of like well, it's like the Hummer is now. I don't know anyone who has one, but they're going to try and hit a market that's a little different than the than the guys that are fooling around with the Cybertruck. So I'm pretty sure that owning a Cybertruck for me is going to be just exactly what I want. I'll be able to go hunting with it. I'll take it off road. It's a little heavy for mud, but I'll take my chances. The crash worthiness aspect, there's no reason in the world why that car couldn't crash just as well as any other car. My guess is that it'll come out at 5 stars right off the bat. And as far as the castings or the steel, like the stainless steel exoskeleton, I don't think you have to worry about anything there. I think that from an intrusion standpoint, you're not going to see a whole lot of that vehicle bending. Those trapezoidal styling lines, aren't just styling lines. They're there to make it very, very rigid. So I like pretty much everything about what I see in the Cybertruck. Now, to put that in context, one of my other guys, we did some work for some investors, and so we got a chance to get the inside track on the Rivian. One of my guys drove the Rivian, and he has a Jeep Trailhawk, and which is a pretty fancy go anywhere kind of a place with all the luxury you could imagine. And he's getting a Rivian. There's nobody is going to dissuade him on that. And he put a deposit down while we were doing the assessment. I mean, after driving it, he said, "This is it. It's the one I want." And that was the end of that. So I think that there's going to be no problems associated with Tesla or Rivian or Hummer with crash testing or anything. They're going to be a smidge heavy, but apart from that, they'll be just fine.
Just to clarify, I wasn't saying that there would be issues with the Tesla. I'm just saying with the people testing it,
no.
Like, will their equipment need to be changed a little bit to see what? All right, cool. That's cool to know that. I was always, because that is something that pops up a lot. And you are starting to work on the Archimato
Nobe
and the Luthier.
Yeah.
I can't remember the other car, Nobe. And recently somebody on Twitter asked if Elon would be interested in helping y'all out with it. And he responded that just because it's a three-wheeled vehicle, he's really not interested in it because of safety. I would like to hear you dispute it or see. And my thought, I showed it to a friend who worked at Ericsson, and I actually want to go, I'll go more into that. But his thought process was that maybe you could add a fourth wheel or something like that pops down to gain extra traction. But I was like, that's a little bit too much over engineering, because I love that Nubu. I love the design of that classic smooth lines, abrupt grill. I love it. I love that kind of design era. And I was just wanted to see if you had any like a counter argument to how you could make a three wheeled vehicle safer.
Well, let me first tell you that in 1913 there was a car company in England, and they were chartered to make a two wheel vehicle. Okay, this is 1913, before the First World War. All right, they did. It would seat nine people. It seated nine people. It had a 12 horsepower motor and a great big giant gyroscopic wheel. Okay, that was inside the vehicle. So, right, yeah. So
I think that, you showed this on one of your YouTube videos recently.
Could go up a 35% grade. I can't do that with my Jeep. Okay, it doesn't work. So I could make in 1913 a vehicle that wouldn't tip over with two wheels. And now somebody's going to tell me I can't make a three-wheel vehicle. So Monroe and Associates doesn't just work on cars. We also do missiles, bombs, all kinds of satellites and things that go into space. And now, instead of having a spinning gyro, everybody has an electronic, a solid-state gyro that fits on top of a board, and that basically will keep you level. So I'm going to take that technology, put it into the three-wheel vehicle, and it'll never tip over. As a matter of fact, it's going to control the it'll control the air shock system that we've got on it, and it'll always remain flat. So it's called ARC, anti-roll control. It's not like brand spanking new. It's not like an invention. It's been around for a long time. So that's the first thing. So I don't think I'm going to have to worry about it flipping over or anything like that. So the next thing is crash worthiness. Well, a three-wheeled vehicle is called an auto cycle. And an auto cycle is a motorcycle. It's classified as a motorcycle. So how much crash worthiness does a motorcycle have? Well, I had four motorcycles. One went into a swamp when I was going too fast and hit a bunch of rocks. And I knew that I was going to go into that swamp, so I jumped off. And the bike went and disappeared in the swamp. But I wound up with rocks in my ass. But at the end of the day, that was one. Two, I bought and sold. I had a BSA and a Triumph. And both of those didn't make me happy. And then I had a Kawasaki. With the Kawasaki, I wound up in another accident, and that was the end of that. Now, I did have one other Harley for about 4 days, and I bought it in my neighborhood, actually. A guy had a garage sale, and that thing was sitting there, and I said, can I start it? And he said, well, it doesn't start. I don't know what's wrong. It's got gas, got this, got everything. It doesn't work. So I looked at it, and I could see that he had the petcock shut off. He only had like a few hundred miles on it. Somebody had shut the petcock off, and he didn't know how to turn it back on, or he was too embarrassed to ask anybody. So anyway, I said, look, I'll give you X, and if you want to sell it, or you don't sell it today and you want to sell it, then I live right over there, and I'll buy it off you for this much money. And he claimed, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, guess what? His wife thought that any money was better than no money. And so at about, 9 o'clock or something, I got a knock on the door, and I wound up with a motorcycle. So a Harley Fab Boy. So I pushed it into the garage, and I paid the guy. And the next morning, I went and tested the gas, and it was skunky, so I wasn't going to take any chances with that. I sucked the gas out of the tank. I flushed out the carburetors and everything that I needed to do. And when I got all done, I put new gas in, opened up the petcock, and second kick, and it was on its way. So I drove that thing on the road. It didn't have a current license plate or whatever, but I was insured. I told him I'm getting a license plate. So I drove it on the road. I drove around a little bit, and I went to make a left-hand turn, and a guy came over and hit my leg. He didn't see me. Okay. So when I got back to, well, actually, when I made the turn, a guy said, hey, that's a really nice bike. I said, it's for sale. He said, great, I'd like to buy it. I said, let's go and make a deal. So I took him to my condo, and he bought it. Now, how safe was that bike? Let's see. I had 5 accidents where I thought I was going to die. I had a helmet, and I had a leather jacket on most of the time. And I still wound up, like I say, with rocks still in my butt. So I don't think there's much safe there. That's the regulation that I have to live with. So what we're looking at for the Archimoto and the Nobay is we're going to have seat belts that turn into airbags. So they have that. They have seat belts is a good idea, I think, that you can't get in a motorcycle. They are going to be crash worthiness, like the rear end crash, no problem. There's lots of material that'll fold up. Front end crash, we've got things in front that'll, you know, make it so that you're going to survive, like what I would classify as a normal accident. If you get hit by a semi, you're probably going to have an issue. It will not roll over ever because I've got anti-roll control in it, which is something that normal cars don't have. So everybody's impression is different. And I think that what Elon saw was a robin flipping over and it's an English three-wheeled car. He saw those. And I mean, there's tons of pictures of them, you know, killing all the occupants by flipping over. That kind of stuff, that's just an ugly, bad dream. I'm not going to help create anything that's going to be unsafe, believe me. And I'm telling you flat, this is the wave of the future. Because in order to hit like a car that'll hit $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, the only way you're going to get that, only way you're going to get that is by getting rid of a corner and making it so that you've got an affordable transportation mode. So, and we'll be able to make money at it because we won't have to have all the regulations that go into a normal vehicle.
You only said you had, they only said you had an hour today. So sure. I want to do some fast draw questions on the Octovalve. Elon Musk was recently asked about how the HVAC system that they created for the Model Y could be used for a house system or domestic product. And Elon Musk said, yes, absolutely. I think like a heat pump or in the car, being able to use batteries as they're using the batteries as a thermal and electric reservoir is very significant, blah, 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 blah. But then he says, I could see a package where it generates power, storage, heating, and cooling, and air filtration and water purification. What do you think about that? No. Do you think they'll stack multiple octo valves on top of each other? How could you see that? Or a enlarged?
Well, the octo valve is only a controller. It shifts to different positions to send heat or cold to wherever it needs to be. I believe that. And quite frankly, there's plenty of folks that have. That have heat pumps. A heat pump was basically invented for your part of the world where you need air conditioning most of the time. And every once in a while you need to have some heat. Mm-hmm. So the heat pump, no problem. That part will work just fine. Now, what you can do with waste heat and waste cool, that's something that could make a big giant difference. If you're looking at energy storage, batteries don't like to be too hot or too cold. They like to be at around 70 degrees all the time, no highs and lows. With a heat pump, you could take the energy that you don't need or the heat or cold that you don't need, and that could be turned into something that could keep the batteries at a constant state. So that would help your battery life and would give you actually like a longer charge. So up here in the north, you lose about, I don't know, 25-30% of your range if it gets really, really cold. So the heat pump would help out for that.
And with a home system, do you ever see Tesla supplying their like a motor for like a generator? This is once again a Scott Pitty question. Could the motor power some features like a new heat pump or water? Would it help stabilize the grid sometimes? Because they do have these
Well,
amazing mega packs and that auto bidder software. I'm just curious. Do you just think if a motor were, if one of their motors was added to that system, could it do? Could it add better function? Could it drain the batteries quicker so they could get them out to custom to get the energy out to customers
you're talking
quickly,
about a
something
generator,
like
and a
that?
generator needs
Or is it
something
just
to
a
turn it
stupid
around,
idea?
to turn it so that it'll create electricity. Tesla is very, very big into solar, gathering solar power. So that's where the energy would come from to fill up the battery. You can also, during downtimes like at night or something, you could also charge the batteries using the cheaper electricity from like nighttime. The other option you might have is if you're in a really, if you're in a spot where there is no other power around, then what you could do is you could have a like a gen system that would if the if you ran out of the juice in the battery and you want to stay, you want to keep your electricity and whatnot, then your generator would kick in and that would charge the batteries, which would basically light and heat the house. No.
Yeah, because Tesla doesn't do off the grid energy products right now. And I've always thought, well, they need to go into that. And my last little point that I would like to say, during their earnings call, Elon said, "We want to make our cars more affordable, and it's really
Yeah.
important to separate affordability from value for money. If a car is too expensive, or given a or any given product is too expensive, and people don't have enough of money
That's
in their
correct.
bank account, they simply can't buy it, no matter what the value proposition is." Tesla is going to constantly improve and also reduce costs. And I don't know if any American auto manufacturers have bought, last time somebody asked, no American auto manufacturers have bought the Model Y report. And I find that kind of disappointing with Ford coming out with the Mach-E. I find it disappointing that the Bronco didn't come out with an EV version. I just feel like Tesla is going to be so far ahead of the competition. So when they do come out with a compact car that's affordable to the masses, it's going to be too late for some legacy auto manufacturers. And you always see on Twitter or something like that pro Tesla people sometimes say, well, Volkswagen, Ford, they have all this debt
Legacy calls. They're called legacy
or
costs.
pensions that are due and stuff like that. They're these big companies. Yeah, legacy cost. Do you ever see a company this what companies do you see this going kaput and going bang say going bankrupt? Or if one of them's going bankrupt, all of them are going bankrupt. Do you actually see a legacy auto manufacturer going, we can't catch up, we're done for, we have too much legacy costs, we're never going to be able to afford going past this point? What warning signs do you see in that, and do you see it as a possibility that, because a long time ago we were hearing an analyst saying there's going to only be
Yeah.
six car manufacturers in such and such time period? Well, I mean, he's kind of correct.
Right. PSA.
Fiat Chrysler's might be merging with one of the French auto manufacturers, so that's going to condense it. You might see Nissan get absorbed by Toyota or Super you or another French car company. It's gonna You're gonna see a lot of consolidation in the auto industry, and it seems like the EV startups and Tesla aren't really, I don't see them for
No.
like Tesla forming a GM of EVs. I don't see that happening where it's multiple brands under one umbrella. What do you see in 10, 20 years.
Okay, so
Ford,
right
GM
now,
exists the like they do today.
Hundreds of different car companies that are out there. I can narrow it down to about 25 that you could say, okay, that's a car company or that's a badge that, you know, that is recognized. Personally, I think that the 25 will probably drop to about 12. And the reason for that is simply because executive generation that they've got in place right now, or the past generation of executives, didn't take electric vehicles serious. Now, when I started, go ahead.
It looks like Volkswagen is at one point the Porsche family backed this current CEO to go full EV green, and it seems like they're going towards it. Mm-hmm. But they're another company that has a lot of brands under their umbrella that I could see them cleaving off brands, because I mean literally Audi is a rebadged Volkswagen. I say this and Audi probably doesn't like it, but all Audi is a rebadged Volkswagen with more expensive interior and a bigger gasoline motor that has more performance parts. That's it. And even the Volkswagen new SUV that they came out with is basically a toned down version of the Lamborghini Urus. It's this, they just took the Lamborghini bits off and the big motor, put a V6 in it and put Volkswagen badges on it. I could see these big companies with, because like GM did with Saturn and Pontiac, they cleavered them off and killed them. And you can keep on going, but I just see these big corporations with multiple sub brands saying, why are we rebadging these cars?
No, it's no problem at all. I think that, quite frankly, Volkswagen is probably in the best situation. They were plagued with all the problems that happened with their diesel cheating and stuff like that. So they decided to fire the guys at the top, the ones that didn't get arrested. They fired all the rest of them and said, okay, fine. We need to move our needle from, horrible and dirty to ultra clean. And so I believe that Volkswagen is probably in the best position as far as the Europeans are concerned. When we look over at China and Japan and Korea and those kind of places, there's some, like NIO is a very, very, it's a very nice SUV that they have, electric SUV. And I know that Toyota and Honda are definitely, they're not going to die. They're not going to disappear. They have really deep pockets, and they have a deep understanding of electric and also hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. So I believe that they'll be just fine with there. The other guys, the other car companies and whatnot, I don't know how fast they're going to move. I think the only way you'd know that is if you could sit in their boardrooms, and that's the only way.
And like I tell people all the time, look at where Hyundai and Kia were 10 years ago. They were cheaply made, affordable cars, and now look at them. They have the Genesis brand that's more reliable than any German brand that you would consider buying. Their motors sound great. And I have one last question, and it's not Tesla related. I don't know if you've paid attention to it. The Toyota Supra, the new Supra that came out. Supra fans say it's a BMW, because BMW and Toyota jointly developed it. Do you think people are overhyping that? I think it's a great thing to have. I mean, BMW is not known for great reliability. Jeremy Clarkson infamously got a BMW running again by because its security system locked the motor, and he got it unlocked by hammering it on the engine block. I mean, it's there's a lot of quirks with the Bulgarian motors, but it's what do you think of that? And do you think it was a good thing for Toyota to do that? And why have they been so delayed on coming out with an EV when they have a great product like the Prius
Well,
Prime?
Here's the deal.
It's but I mean,
the agreement
car, that
Volkswagen, that. Or sorry, that BMW and Toyota had was for the i5 and the i7. And really, that vehicle was supposed to run on hydrogen. It's supposed to be a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle. Mm-hmm. So BMW and Toyota collaborated on those vehicles. And then all of a sudden, the rules changed. The Quant family, the people who own BMW, they decided, nah, I don't think so. And so all of a sudden, they had to go into scramble mode. And what did they come up with? Well, they came up with a car they could jointly build because they could recoup some of their losses. When you share a product like that, it makes a big, big difference. And you were mentioning about, you know, well, this looks just like that, only a little different. Every car company, except for Tesla, does that. They all take from the parts bin of some other vehicle something that'll make them be a little bit different, but then they don't have to invest any of the any money in tooling and things like that, and they get economy of scale. Now, Tesla does do it in one area. All the seats in every car are the same in Tesla. That's something that they got a comfortable seat, so at least the front seats. So they put them in all their vehicles. Is that cheating? No, it's just good business. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. So I think that the Supra and the BMW, or the Toyota and the BMW alliance, was probably good for both companies. It's too bad that Toyota couldn't make the fuel cell work properly, and BMW spent too much on carbon fiber vehicles. Mm-hmm. So that's what you wind up with.
Yeah, and you're bringing up hydrogen, and I'm just curious quickly if you think, I know I'm keeping you over your time, and I apologize, but is there a efficient future with hydrogen? Is it the future of combustible? Is hydrogen producing and shipping and whatever the future of the gas industry is that what they're going to have to move into to survive, or is hydrogen just not?
Well, I'll tell you, I gave a speech a while ago, and that question came up.
But it's too expensive,
and sometimes I say things I don't know where they come from, but they do make sense. And I said, hydrogen is the fuel of the future, and it always will be. In other words, we aren't going to get there in my lifetime. It's a good idea. It's the most plentiful of all of the elements in the universe. But no, I don't. I'm not buying right now. So, okay. Hey.
All right. Well, thank you, Sandy. If you have any closing remarks, you can go ahead and say them. But thank you for joining me. This is my third podcast, and I hope we can have a chat again, because I have more questions that are coming up in the top of my head. But I would like to do this again, and hopefully we could have some other people on. I know you've talked to Third Row Tesla before, and I'm friends with some of the people that have been on there. And hopefully we can have a better conversation, or a little bit longer one. All right. Wish I actually could come up there.
Well,
and
you're
see
quite welcome, and but, I hope you get
a
lot of listeners.
Day, sir, and thank you for this conversation. Hey, folks. Here's a little bonus bit. This is where we started off recording the podcast, and I just wanted y'all to hear this. I didn't get to touch much on it on the podcast because we only had an hour, and I feel like this would have been its own hour. But hopefully y'all enjoyed this little bonus material.
Okay. Hello, Scott. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Sandy. How are you doing today?
So far, no problems. Well, problems, but nobody gives a shit anyway. No, things have gone okay so far today. Yeah.
Well, pleasant to hear your voice and finally get to do this interview with you. I'm Scott. I'm known on Twitter as Scott Pittity. I can be a little outlandish on Twitter. So if you ever see me anything on Twitter, just realize it's a parody and I'm kind of being silly. But I've been a fan since you started talking about the Model 3 the first time. And to give a little bit of background on myself, I do home inspections for the real estate market. When somebody's buying a home or about to sell it, I go through it and I see all the issues and I write it down in a report and I give it to them. It's kind of what you do, but I don't get to take apart the house. And sometimes I wish I got to take apart the house because I see houses that exceed over 100 years old where you can see the knob and tube wiring and the poor plumbing where the cast iron pipes just clog up to a point where no water flow can get to them. And that's kind of how a 100-year-old house is kind of how I see Legacy Auto. And we're going to get into that into the podcast.
Well, it's funny. You and I have something else in common. I used to do something very similar. I bought and sold houses, but I also went through houses to tell people whether or not it'd be a good idea to buy one. And I remember going into places and I put my hand on a cast iron waste pipe and I squeezed it and I could feel it flex. And I tell the people, you're going to have to put in all new plumbing and the wiring is no good and on and on and on. And they still bought the house. I mean, and at outrageous prices, they just thought that, they wanted to suffer. And that's what I found out. Some people like to suffer.
Yeah, it's interesting because I live in a neighbor in a town where I live in Lynchburg, Virginia, where there's a lot of when there's a historic side of town that was built well over 100 years ago, probably even farther back, and there's run down parts of it, and then there's really expensive parts, but it's not like Charleston where people dump in millions of dollars into these old houses and make huge returns on it. You're going to make a small return on your investment on improving these houses. Thank you for listening to the podcast and the little bonus content at the end. No editing notes this time. That's how me and Sandy ended the conversation. I feel like that was a natural way to end it. I want to thank Sandy and Monroe Associates for scheduling time to be with me. I went over our little hour, but there's so many questions you could ask Sandy. He's so talented and so knowledgeable. I recommend going to subscribe onto their YouTube channel, Monroe Live, and going to their website, monroelive.com. With their videos, you'll learn something with every new one. Y'all, happy listening. Thank you for listening. And if you have any comments, please hit me up on Twitter.